KALW.
You have to take the head off of the snake to actually eliminate the snake, because they will reheal themselves.
We take a look back at a powerful act of civil disobedience that changed the San Francisco Police Department.
Bring us coconut water and blankets and chill with us. Have conversations. Let's talk about books. Let's talk about music. Let's talk about revolution. Let's talk about change.
The Frisco Five hunger strike. Then we turn to the Bay Area art scene. A local musician brings a classical touch to bluegrass.
I love the violin. It's very vocal, and it also has this tremendous quality to be rhythmic and make you dance.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Mainstream media attention for the movement for Black lives appears to be fading. That's according to analysis from 538. But the issue of Black and brown people not feeling safe around police hasn't gone away. And without mass visibility, it can be hard to force politicians to pay attention. That's something a group of activists in San Francisco understood 4 years ago when they went on a hunger strike after a series of fatal police killings. KALW's Sona Avakian and Holly J. McDeed bring us the story of the Frisco Five.
Jessica Williams was shot and killed the morning of May 19, 2016, by a San Francisco police officer. The 29-year-old woman was homeless.
The shooting was this morning in the Bayview District. An unarmed Black woman was killed by an SFPD sergeant.
Just hours later, San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee held a press conference.
The progress that we've made has been meaningful, but it hasn't been fast enough, not for me and not for Greg. And that's why I have asked Chief Sir for his resignation.
Activist Edwin Lindo watched in disbelief.
And we just started crying, and we hugged each other, and we couldn't believe that it actually happened.
Lindo was part of the Frisco Five, a group of activists who went on a very public 17-day hunger strike with one goal in mind: get Chief Sir fired.
You have to take the head off of the snake to actually eliminate the snake. Because they will grow tentacles. They will reheal themselves. They will morph, and they will find ways to continue to operate in the way that they do. And the San Francisco Police Department is a snake, and its head had to be removed. And that was Greg Sir.
Sir was a 30-plus year veteran on the force and a fourth-generation San Franciscan. He's bald, looks kind of tough. His family worked in the lumber business, and his mom, Sharon, a devout Catholic, was so proud of him that she wore a police star he had given her around her neck. He was picked by Mayor Lee to be police chief in 2011.
Wow. I can't begin to thank Mayor Lee enough for... I'm speechless. I owe him everything. This is the biggest honor. It's unbelievable. So thank you. I wrote down that I gratefully accept this appointment, but I already did that.
Sir pledged a series of reforms while he was police chief, but none of them seemed to happen fast enough. Officers sent racist, sexist, and homophobic text messages while he was chief.
And then there was the spate of police killings. In March of 2014, 28-year-old Alex Nieto was killed.
Alex Nieto stopped at Bernal Heights Park before work to have a burrito and watch the sunset. He carried a taser on his belt for his security job at a San Francisco nightclub.
In response to that fatal shooting, activists, including those who would later become the Frisco Five, organized meetings, marched, and protested. About a year later, police shot and killed Amilcar Perez Lopez in the Mission. And in December of 2015, officers shot and killed Mario Woods in the Bayview. Again, people marched demanding justice, and Greg Sir was still in charge. Then, in April of 2016, a homeless immigrant named Luis Gongora Pat was shot and killed by police.
A new call tonight for the firing of the police chief in San Francisco. It comes after the death of a homeless man in an officer-involved shooting.
He and his brother had recently been evicted from the apartment they shared in the Mission. For the Frisco Five, the death of Luis Gongora Pat was the tipping point. After so many fatal shootings, they still didn't see anything being done to change the culture of policing or hold officers accountable.
At the same time, the Black Lives Matter movement was gaining momentum in response to similar killings by officers in cities like New York and Ferguson. Longtime organizer Maria Cristina Gutierrez wanted the world to pay attention to the police shootings in San Francisco, so she called for a hunger strike.
I said, wow, we gotta start doing something. And I went to every demonstration and to everything. And that did it to me. I said, what am I saying? Why am I saying somebody should do something? I had to do something.
People call her Mama Cristina. She's a petite woman who's been known to wear a peace sign necklace and her hair in a short bob. She comes from a family of activists. Her dad organized one of the first labor unions in Colombia, where she was born. At the time of the strike, she was 66 years old, and she ran the Companeros del Barrio preschool.
I said, this cannot go on, and I'm a mother, a grandmother. My family is a rainbow coalition. We have all the colors. And I said, for my children, for the children of this school that I teach in, for the children of this city, for the children of this country, for the children of the world, enough.
It was Mama Cristina's idea to start a hunger strike to draw attention to the police shootings and the failings of the chief. Her son, Equipto, agreed to join her. The group grew to include educator and rapper Ike Pinkston, rapper Avery Selassie Blackwell, and Edwin Lindo, a candidate for supervisor. The press dubbed them the Frisco Five.
The hunger strikers slept outside the Mission police station. People dropped off tents to make them more comfortable. News crews came out to speak with them, like in this interview with rapper Avery Selassie Blackwell.
Why are you out here?
Well, I'm a San Francisco political activist, number one. I've been fighting for justice for the last 10, 12 years in San Francisco, Oakland, wherever there was a struggle, I've been involved.
This is Maria Cristina. She's one of the hunger strikers here in front of the Valencia police station. What do you want people to know, and how can people help and support?
Well, we need the people to call Mayor Lee and to please tell him that he needs to fire the chief of police, because if not, he will have our lives in his hands.
While what they were doing was painful, they also wanted to have fun. It was a little bit festive, like friends just hanging out and yelling things with bullhorns, including Mama Cristina's son, underground hip-hop artist Equipto.
Bring us coconut water and blankets and chill with us, have conversations. Let's talk about books, let's talk about music, let's talk about revolution, let's talk about change.
The Aztec dancers came out. And so did the lowriders. People chanted, drivers honked. And some members of the Frisco Five smoked a lot of pot. Remember, in the spring of 2016, recreational cannabis was still illegal in California.
To sit in front of the police station, intense, defiant to everything, smoking pot, telling the police we don't care, telling the mayor, the supervisors, we didn't care. We wanted justice for those individuals. And that was it. And we didn't care if we went to jail.
Support from the community came in different ways.
We had that whole Mission neighborhood was like, people would drop us off their keys. Here's my keys, you know, just take a shower whenever you want. So we would all do that, take a shower, get freshened up, then leave and come back to the hunger strike.
Preschool teacher, rapper, and Frisco Five member Ike Pinkston had this to say about their safety while sleeping on the sidewalk.
You know, people came and volunteered to be security for us, to watch over us, to make sure that while we slept, the police officers didn't come out and do anything to us, or any passerbyers didn't do anything to us.
It's been a long time coming, but I know the change won't come.
This was the beginning of a larger movement. Many people helped and supported the Frisco Five, including Dr. Rupa Maria. She and some medical students formed a makeshift clinic on the sidewalk, weighing the Frisco Five daily and taking their blood pressure.
I offered my help as a physician to accompany them in their struggle. I offered to make sure that they were safe as well as they could be, and to understand their advanced directives, like how far were they willing to take this hunger strike.
The hunger strikers sustained themselves with broth and coconut water. As the days went by, the group rallied around Mama Christina. Edwin Lindo says she was the force who held them together. On the 10th day of the hunger strike, he spoke before the growing crowd that had been joining them outside the police station.
Sacrificing this woman right here is a queen. Her spirit is driving us. She may possibly have pneumonia, and this is no joke. She signed a document that said if it comes down to it, she does not want medical attention. We're not joking. And I hope Ed Lee and Chief Sir go to sleep at night and know that our blood is on their hands. Because Alex Nieto, Amilcar Perez Lopez, Mario Woods, and Luis Gargora is already on their hands.
Mayor Ed Lee said he didn't buy the argument that bringing in a new chief would lay the groundwork for meaningful change. And he said he had already been working with Greg Sir on a series of police reforms.
I have to say that I recognize there's the level of politics that are involved, but you know, I'm about making sure that these reforms do get done and they're led properly, and the chief has not been an obstacle to that. In fact, he's been championing these reforms and he's holding officers accountable.
Mayor Lee offered to talk with the hunger strikers and even went down to the Mission Police Station to meet with them. But the Frisco Five wanted the meeting on their own terms. So the next day, their 13th without food, they went down from the Mission to City Hall to meet with the mayor. Hundreds of people who became known as the Frisco 500 marched with them. Mama Christina and the other hunger strikers were in wheelchairs.
I don't want us to die. I don't want to die. I want to go home. I want to eat some good food. I don't even want to talk about that. Right? But this fight has to go on. We cannot quit now. You know that, right?
We were being wheeled in wheelchairs down to City Hall to meet this goofball who decided not to be there.
That's right. Ed Lee wasn't there. It's not really clear where he was. According to 48 Hills, his calendar had him at City Hall, but his spokesperson said he was in the Bayview.
He knew we were coming. We had rallies and everything. And what he did to throw it in our face, he went over to the Bayview while we marched from the San Francisco Mission Street Police Department to City Hall. He went on a so-called PR thing to go to a black business in Hunters Point.
Later that afternoon, the Frisco Five were hospitalized. They were gaunt, rapidly losing weight, and needed more care than they could receive on the street. After 4 days in the hospital, they called off the strike. But while they recovered, their supporters invited everyone to take part in a general strike.
In San Francisco, supporters of the so-called Frisco Five are calling for a citywide strike. They're asking people to stay home from work, boycott businesses, and keep their kids out of school.
By this point, some politicians were beginning to see their side. Soon after the strike ended, four members of the Board of Supervisors joined their call for Greg Sir to resign.
The call for the firing of San Francisco's police chief just changed significantly. Up until now, it was primarily coming from protesters.
Now, Greg Sir has said he is committed to staying on the job, but this is the first time that any city leadership has come out against him. So politicians today now all choosing sides in this controversy.
And then Jessica Williams, the 29-year-old homeless woman, was killed by police. And that's when Mayor Ed Lee held that press conference, announcing that Chief Sir had resigned.
And in this solemn moment, we must put aside politics and begin to heal the city. Thank you.
Sir's resignation was the entire goal of the hunger strike. But Ike Pinkston wasn't totally satisfied.
It was kind of bittersweet because, I mean, he resigned, but he still got his pension. That's what it was all about. It was all about money. But Ed Lee wanted him to stay on because Ed Lee was trying to prove that Ed Lee had the last say and that he was the one in charge with the power and not us, the people.
Soon after that, SFPD officers were equipped with body cameras. The city's police commission adopted a use of force policy that emphasizes de-escalation and alternatives to using force. Chief Greg Sir was replaced by Bill Scott, an African-American man from the Los Angeles Police Department. One report from the Justice Department shows use of force dropped 47% since 2016.
But that same report shows San Francisco police continue to use force disproportionately against Black and Latino people. The members of the Frisco Five now want to defund the police because people of color are still being shot and killed by law enforcement around the country.
George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Stephon Clark, Philando Castile, Alton Sterling, to name a few.
And the Frisco Five haven't stopped fighting for justice. Edwin Lindo is now a professor at the University of Washington and a critical race theory scholar. Ike Pinkston is still teaching. He, Equipto, and Selassie are still highlighting injustice, often through music.
Yo, thousands of brothers and sisters every day getting killed by the pigs all around the world. Man, what you gonna do about it, bro? Come on.
Mama Cristina is still the director of the Compañeros del Barrio Preschool. Every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., she shows up to make some noise at 850 Bryant, the Hall of Justice, with a group called Mothers on the March.
We are mamas. We have our babies for 9 months in our belly, and then they steal the life with total impunity.
When Mama Cristina thinks back to the Frisco Five, she thinks about how little has changed in the last 4 years, and even since George Floyd's death. And she thinks about fasting for social justice again.
I'm thinking about that, but I want to do it somewhere else. I want to do it in front of the White House.
Because this isn't just a San Francisco issue. As we know all too well, it's national. For Cross Currents, I'm Sona Avakian.
And I'm Holly J. McDeed.
Thanks, Sona and Holly. And the song you're listening to right now is Livin' Right by Bored Stiff, whose members include some of the Frisco Five.
Gathering information, travel the world, smile no matter the situation. Let me be the fire and part of the inspiration. Show them how it is for artists and entertainers. Walk the fine line when rhyming up in the studio. My dear mama say it's beautiful. Lesson the heart, things fall apart or go so far. In the art, can't be sacrificed to put on the chart. It's pimp taps. I wonder if the whole world listening. Your sound going down in history.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now we're going to meet Grammy-nominated violinist Alyssa Rose. She's half of the duo Scroggins and Rose. Alyssa lives in the Bay Area. Her musical partner Tristan Scroggins lives in Nashville and plays mandolin. Their latest album is Curios. The duo's contemporary roots music is a blend of classical and bluegrass. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Alyssa Rose about her love for music that began during her childhood in the Midwest.
What was music like in your home growing up in Wisconsin?
Well, my mom loves folk music, and she always had the public radio station on listening to folk music. And my dad loved classical music, so I enjoyed going through his old records of chamber music greats. And in the car, he would blast opera. And we lived in the country in the beautiful Wisconsin rolling green hills. So we spent a lot of time in the car. So that's why I talk about that as a music listening place.
That must be beautiful and lovely to grow up somewhere like that. What was music like in your community?
Well, I grew up outside of Verona, Wisconsin, which is very near Madison, Wisconsin. So Verona actually has a great school music program, and I loved playing in the jazz band and the orchestra and everything at school. But I also did a little bit of fiddling growing up. Local fairs would have fiddle contests. Sometimes they were the kind that were like on a truck that opens up into a stage and then you have the fiddle contest on there. And I started to get into fiddling as a kid through doing these fiddle contests and hearing other people play the fiddle. And then in middle school, I played with this group called the Wisconsin Old Time Fiddle Association, something like that. And it was a bunch of men in their, mostly in their, a few women, mostly in their like 70s and 80s, and me, and I was like 12. And we would play at different community centers around the city. And I loved the playing fiddle tunes with other people and the sense of community even then.
What brought you to violin?
Well, I started very little. And I think I really started because my older sisters played.
Oh, okay.
And I wanted to be like them. Technically, I started when I was 2 and a half, mm-hmm. which the Suzuki methods. You start with like a box with a ruler taped on it.
Okay.
And you learn how to like bow and hold it up. And that takes a while when you're 2.5.
Wow. So you were starting then so young. When did you really say to yourself, this is something I want to do seriously?
I always thought it was something I might want to do, you know, growing up as a kid. Like, I always loved it. And I think, you know, even in like first grade, I was like, I want to be a violinist or something, you know. Mm-hmm. But in middle school, I got more serious about the violin. And it became something that I was like, oh, maybe this is really my thing.
A beautiful instrument. I mean, it's like, you know, when you're listening to like an orchestra and that solo violinist comes out, it's just like the whipped cream on top of the ice cream.
Yeah, I love the violin. It's very vocal. And it also has this tremendous quality to be rhythmic and make you dance. And it also has the ability to be virtuosic and do all sorts of cool sounds and colors and things with it. So I think it's in many folk traditions and it's found all over the world because it has all of those things. The soulful vocal thing is maybe the most prominent, but the other things are really important too.
Yeah, it's a different type of energy that it brings to a song. And you can use it because you play funk, you play classical, you play bluegrass.
I like it all.
So you came to the Bay Area. What was it like coming from Wisconsin to here?
It definitely felt like the huge big city to me when I arrived.
Yeah.
I mean, I was mostly in the Sunset District, and that still felt like the huge big city to me. So I was like, wow, there's all these different kinds of food and different kinds of people. It's so cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I loved being near the ocean. So it was definitely hugely eye-opening and exciting.
How did you meet Tristan Scroggins, who is your partner on this album?
I met Tristan teaching at a camp in British Columbia called Nimble Fingers. So we were both teaching. And after you teach at this kind of thing, you hang out in the evenings and you play music with each other and you jam all night. Late into the night. So I was playing some music with him one night and we started improvising on some fiddle tunes and sort of spinning around, going different places with them, and found we had like a very natural connection. And then we kept trying to play together when we could. And then gradually that led us to becoming a duo.
So your album Curios, tell us about it. It's lovely. It's just lovely to listen to.
Oh, thanks. So Curios comes from the idea of, you know, little curiosities, little beautiful trinkets that you find. And with this album, we really worked on each tune extensively, trying to craft it into a tune with a strong melody, with a strong like shape, and with emotional intent for each song. So we really looked at every detail of these songs and worked on them for a long time. So that's why we called it Curios.
I was listening to your album a few times. I really enjoy it. I like it because it's very soothing, but it also has an energy to it. I think right now, just with so much work coming out during quarantine, why do you think this album is significant now in light of everything that's happening?
Well, at its core, I think our music is very conversational. It's a conversation between two people with two wooden instruments in the same room. And I hope that that translates on this album. And I feel like right now when we're all socially distanced and physically distanced, I know I'm craving more connection, and I think most people in the world are, you know. So I hope that you feel like you're in the room with us and that you're a third person experiencing this sort of, you know, close conversation.
That was violinist Alyssa Rose speaking with KELW's Janae Darden. Alyssa's part of the duo Scroggins and Rose. Their latest album is Curios. You can learn more at KELW.org, and that's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter. Today's Cross Currents team includes Scott Carroll, Sonia Narang, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Lisa Ramreka. Our engineers are Gabe Graben and Tarek Foda. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.